Hi, my name is Linda Parham. Today is Thursday, May the 26th, 2011, and this is 508 Worcester. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm Michael Benedetti, also on the show today, as usual, as Brendan Malikin. How are you doing, Brendan?
Excellent, sir. How are you?
How are you doing, Linda?
I am just fine. Excited to be out here. Nice weather.
Fantastic weather. Oh, my goodness. This is the best television studio in the city of Worcester. I can't believe it. There's not even that much trash out here today, really.
I've actually been picking some up lately, so I get some bottle caps.
Pieces of cigarettes, whatever. Nothing too bad.
No.
So we are going to talk today a little bit about a couple of newspaper stories, but mostly we're going to talk about a project that Linda is doing. Linda, what is this project?
This project is a project for the neighborhoods in the city of Worcester.
Okay.
It's called Bountiful Harvest.
Okay.
And what it's about is taking surplus food, recycling it, and turning it into healthy meals and redistributing it to communities that are in the, especially poor community, poverty areas.
Okay. So this would be like, so you were talking, thinking specifically about like what neighborhoods?
I'm going to just target three neighborhoods to begin with.
Okay.
I'm going to look at Graybrook Valley. I'm going to also look at Main South.
Okay.
And I'm going to look at the Piedmont Chandler Street area.
Okay.
Okay, because I found those would be the easiest to try to look at getting some kind of collaboration
okay.
going.
And Linda is actually right now working on getting a substantial grant to make this happen. And you, the viewer, can be part of that. In a few minutes we'll tell you how. Can you take us through the process? So you said the first thing is to recycle or to get a hold of surplus food. Like what
yeah,
is that?
The first thing is we waste a lot of food in mm-hmm. this country. So, you know, like at the end of, you know, where you go and get your coffee and donuts, at if they have leftover food, instead of throwing it out, we would pick it up and we can recycle it. Like at some of the local supermarkets,
mm-hmm.
instead of them throwing the food out, what we would do is get the food that's usually at the back of the store that's maybe marked down
mm-hmm.
and recycle it into a healthy meal. Like say, for instance, apples, you can turn it into applesauce. Bananas, you can turn it into banana
yeah.
bread, you know, and recycle it, put it into healthy meals and help in terms of it, because we have a huge issue in this state of food insecurity.
Yeah. You know, that's very interesting. I know that there's a lot of people who are sort of doing like food recycling or food reclamation or whatever mm-hmm. it is, but there's just so much food. Like if you go around the dumpsters, as some of us have done,
yes.
there's a ton of food, really, really good, nice, fancy food being thrown out in the city every day.
Yes, and that's the whole thing is that there are people that are in the city of Worcester. That's why we're not trying to do, I'm not looking to say start this up and do it as a one-man show. I'm looking to do collaboration with some of the food shelters and stuff that's already giving out food.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing that will make ours different is because many times people go and they get food in a bag. A lot of the people that go and get the food in bags don't even have a place to prepare it. They don't know how to take it and put it into a healthy meal. And we're saying that
yeah.
we will make it into a healthy meal and then take it to some of these agencies. That's why we're looking at collaboration.
Ah, sure, yeah. And that's, you know, that's kind of good too, because people who don't have a kitchen facility or for some other reason are challenged by cooking, like the food that they can use from a food pantry would be like, I don't know, like crackers and peanut butter and, you know,
dry goods
or a lot of like prepared,
mm-hmm.
sometimes prepared foods, which are not always the most healthy foods compared
mm-hmm.
to like a whole foods kind of mm-hmm. home cooking thing that you could
mm-hmm.
do.
And you talked a little bit about, you know, all this great food that goes into the dumpster. We want to get it before it goes into the dumpster. So one of the other things is that before we even get it to the clients, I'm going to, you know, with this grant that I'm trying to get, we'll be able to go and do some collaboration
mm-hmm.
With some of the local supermarkets and say, we will come and get your food.
Yeah.
Okay. And we will take the food off of your hand. We will pick it up. It can be, you know, items that may be perishable, but also in addition to that, it could be canned items. And I know many of us have seen at the back of these grocery stores where they have a markdown shelf, a bent can of food. There's nothing wrong with that food, but we would come and get it and we will recycle it. And that's what we call it. We're saying recycle it, but it's surplus food and make
yeah.
it into it before it gets to the dumpster. So you know, many of us don't have to go dumpster diving.
Sure, exactly.
Is there any benefit to, say, the businesses that would be involved, where they could then look at what instead what they would normally be putting in a dumpster or marking down, where they could look at that as, say, like a tax deduction or something, as giving it to it? Like, is there any benefit to the private sector, where a lot of these goods would be coming from, that would then encourage them to actually partake instead of maybe looking at it as a liability, which I oftentimes think a lot of the businesses do look at it as a liability. I'm taking something that I would throw away and I'm going to give it to another person. What if somebody gets sick or what have you? Is there a way to offset that by maybe looking at, you know, looking at these again, like charitable donations that maybe could be a tax deduction or something down the line?
Well, there are two things that you talked about. The first thing is for liability. I'm going to talk about that. They created the Good Samaritan Law. Mm-hmm. And what this basically is, it says that it takes away those organizations that want to be able to donate their food and not be held accountable if something happens. Okay. And so that's what that's the Good Samaritan Law in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. So that they can be free to donate the food
without worrying about liability.
Without worrying about liability, unless they're in an intentionality. Like, they would not donate something if they know that it had like E. coli.
Spoiled already.
Yeah, they would not. That just okay. that. But other than that, that's what the Good Samaritan Law makes. Now, as far as the tax break, they're writing that off anyway. Most good for-profit business, they already have they already account for so much that's going to either get spoilage, broken, or whatever. So they're already accounting for that. Now, I'm sure once I go and meet with the organization, that just the fact that they're doing something good for the community, mm-hmm. that in itself is going to increase their sales, I would think. Mm-hmm. Because right now what they're looking at in this country is that can for-profit organization make a profit and also do good for a social benefit in the community? Mm-hmm. And I think this would be a great way of doing that. It's good PR.
Absolutely. Yeah. Where did your idea for this come from?
I have to be honest with you, it's not original. However, it's original in this area. There was an organization that I found, and it's been around. The gentleman's name is Robert Egger, and he created this. I believe he started it in 1989, and it's called DC Central Kitchen. Mm. Anyone can Google it. And he started by taking the very same concept and recycling, and he's grown. It's been over 20 years. And one of the things that he added on, which is what I'm looking to do with the grant, is create a job culinary training program so that we not only feed people, but we will train them so that they can be able to go out. These individuals that may not have the proper education, mm-hmm. may have some kind of glitch on their record,
yes.
some type of way.
Sure.
That's a fancy way of saying, you know,
Corey issues, yes.
Yes. So it's not an original idea, but I don't think there's no idea that's original. All I'm saying is that we're going to take it and create it and try to use this grant to fit it here in the Worcester area.
I love that idea, too, of working with local people, because you're right. There's a lot of people who are already doing stuff, but at the same time, like, there's also a ton of food ending up in the dumpster at the end of every day, that there's definitely still connections that need to happen there.
Yes. I am absolutely big on collaboration, partnering, because no one can solve any of our social issues by themselves.
So let's do the pitch now. So you are potentially going to get a grant from Pepsi.
Yes.
Is this right? This is like a big grant.
This is like a big grant to be able to get this off the ground. And what the grant is that Pepsi no longer take Pepsi paper grants online.
Okay.
What you have to do is apply for it online.
Okay.
So I had to go several cycles, and so we made it to this round. It's a $50,000 grant.
Cool.
And if you get this, and you can look online when you go up to vote, because I need your help. I need votes.
The viewer. People are going to step up.
So here it is. All right, so now we're going to give you a second if you're at home to get off your couch.
We'll look at the pond while you're getting up off your couch. Or if you're
looking on your computer, you're opening up another browser tab, that's fine.
Here's the URL. It's refresheverything.com/bountifulharvestrecycling. That's refresheverything.com/bountifulharvestrecycling. Or you can just Google Pepsi Refresh Bountiful Harvest. If you Google Pepsi Refresh Bountiful Harvest, you will find that.
There it is. There's a YouTube there. You can vote for it there. You can make this happen in the city of Worcester.
We'll give you another second. Thank you for taking the trouble to vote for this project. I think that's really fantastic. What do you think, Brendan?
It's spectacular. I mean, in a way, I think it ties into some of the stuff that we've been talking about lately as well, too, with more local economy of scale type issues, where you're talking about job training and giving people opportunity in terms of employment and what have you. It's so much of our focus is always external. Food coming in, food going out, or production going out, production coming in. This is something that seems to be intended on keeping things very local. We have a local issue, so let's put local folks to work to solve that issue. And like you said, I mean, you don't do this stuff alone. It is hard oftentimes, I think, to get the entire community wrapped around something. This is something that just makes sense, right? I mean, even if it's just a matter of keeping our landfills from overflowing with waste, the benefit is actually making sure somebody isn't hungry at the end of the day. Kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, and that's why I'm targeting the three areas, starting out small, saying that, okay, and I'm going to look at organizations that may already be doing something in those areas, and all I'm going to do is go, and once we get the grant, after you vote for me, get the grant, and be able to go and just say, this is what we can do.
Right.
Let's work together, because I believe we all have the same objective.
Right.
We just got to take a different path to get there.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of times, too, it seems like it's messaging, right? When you say something like, people being hungry or what have you, the image that pops into somebody's head might be someone with, addiction issues on a street corner, when the reality is it tends to be like kids. Someone going to school on an empty stomach, or, even with, the federal funds that are there for school nutrition programs. Mm-hmm. They're not there the way they used to be, and you still have a lot of hungry kids in the city who haven't had the opportunity to do anything wrong in their lives yet, but they're still suffering because, food's getting thrown into a dumpster at the end of the day. That doesn't make any sense.
I'm glad that you said that, because two of our target, really big target groups, is going to be women and children.
Mm.
People do not understand that if a child goes to school hungry, it will interfere with their ability to learn.
Mm.
It will interfere with they can sit in school all day long and leave and not learn anything. And this is not something that I am just saying. You can check, this will also, you can check any of the data that's out there that's been put out on child obesity and any of these issues, food insecurity. And also, this is about a health issue too.
Mm.
It's about a health issue. And the reason we're saying healthy foods, because you can eat tons of oodles and noodles that will fill your stomach, but it is unhealthy.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so this is why we're saying balanced meals. And if you look in the target areas in low-income communities and communities of color, there is a huge health care disparity issue.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, diabetes and obesity are some of the major problems.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, we can have all the patriotic speeches we want about how great of a country we are, but when it comes to, especially when you mention women and children, when you're looking at healthcare issues or food security issues or what have you, we're bordering on third world country in terms of, the problems that we have in those areas.
I want to change the subject for a couple of minutes. Then we're going to come back to this, because I got to talk about. So this is awesome. Anyway, by the way, if you didn't already vote, 3fresheverything.com/bountifulharvestrecycling. All right, so now you took care of that. Great. So I'm going to talk about crazy stuff, because we haven't talked about anything crazy on the show today. I'm going to talk about two Telegram and Gazette articles, and some print stuff. I have a lot of unhealthy interests. Linda, I'm sorry to tell you, and one of my unhealthy interests is in Telegram and Gazette circulation figures. Which I've been obsessed with for years and years and years now. So the circulation numbers basically come out every 6 months for the previous 6 months. And recently, the people who do the circulation, the daily circulation numbers for the newspapers, totally changed how they measure stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, you can't compare to the last month. It's like we have metric A that they used last year and metric B that they used this year, and they say do not compare the two. But the Telegram Gazette was able to pull out of the reports for themselves information about not circulation but readership, which I guess is just how many people, I think that their daily circulation is 70,000-80,000 people, and their readership is 381,000 people. So I guess that's just sort of people who are aware of the paper being around or who read it, a certain amount of
that
time.
That one copy that's left at the coffee shop, it's 100 people coming
through.
That
one copy, pass through. I think it pass. Is it pass through, pass
so
along?
Is this a pitch more less to say that they're successful in terms of circulation and instead to convince their advertisers that they're still.
We don't know what's going on with their circulation, but their readership is actually up.
Which would be good for advertising, I guess.
Which would be great for advertising. So they're actually, their readership is up 5.6% in the last year. And they have a quote here, which is, while the many ABC rules changes make any comparisons to prior years problematic, our readership remains strong, said Tony Similardes, Director of Readership and Circulation. Yeah, so this is like potentially good news or potentially I'm being spun. I don't know. Like, I honestly would always want to read, like, I want to see the PDF, man. I want to see the study to know what's really going on here. But potentially good news. Potentially, you know.
All we need is that one paper to be printed every day, and we can just post it up in some central
this
location downtown.
This is also an efficiency
as long as
issue.
Everybody comes by and reads.
Exactly. So the other, so that's good. So good news. That's a good news. The other one is one that I want to complain about, and there have been a lot of like scary things going on in the last week with people swinging guns around at youth sports games and whatever in the city.
There's another story today, too.
Yeah. There was another story today. I don't know what's going on, but it's not good. But I want to talk about a different crime, and this crime is the first sentence of an article on the 525 issue of the Telegram and Gazette. The article is titled, City Slaying Rate Lowest Among Peers. And the first sentence is, compared to other cities with close to Worcester's population in New England, the city has seen half the murders but more violent crime. This is from an FBI report, and this is comparing Worcester to Springfield, Hartford, and yes, Providence.
Mm.
And this, I'll tell you why this drives me crazy, Linda. It's because Worcester, population-wise, is, you know, more or less the same size as Providence, but Worcester is nothing like Providence. Worcester only has the population that it has because of technical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, Worcester is much larger physically than Providence.
Mm-hmm.
So Worcester is like a small city with some reasonable sized suburbs,
mm-hmm.
that all just happen to be within this city boundary,
mm-hmm.
that if you compare like Providence to the cities surrounding Providence, the small cities surrounding Providence, like for the same area as Worcester, Providence has like 50% more people than Worcester. So Providence is like a super urban area compared,
mm-hmm.
to Worcester. So it drives me crazy that the Telegram and Gazette, and there's nowhere, this is from an FBI report, so this is, you know, like, I mean, it is true that Worcester has whatever crime statistics versus Providence. It's frustrating to me that I feel like what I want from my newspaper is not, here's a report that you could already read online anyway. It's, here's a report, and because we live in Worcester, we're going to help you along,
mm-hmm.
to understand this report. And they're not doing that job.
The other thing that, you know, that stood out that bothered me with that article is that when the FBI or the Department of Justice puts out those statistics,
mm-hmm.
they don't just say, you know, here's Providence, here's Worcester, here's the raw number of crimes. They measure those crimes based on the population. It's usually per 1,000 people.
Right.
So it's a percentage, right? And,
sure.
and when you're dealing with small numbers, it's really hard to use raw numbers as a meaningful indicator of crime, right? Because, I mean, there still is a population difference there. That's why we do have a census, right? I mean, Hartford,
sure.
Providence, Worcester don't share the same population. If you just throw out a raw number for a violent crime, say a murder, it starts to get a little blurry as to what it actually means because those populations aren't the same. If you break it down on a percentage based on, say, again, the typical, you know, per crimes per 1,000 people, it starts to become a little bit more meaningful. And Worcester is still doing far better than any of those other cities,
right.
in terms of those violent crime rates. It's hard to actually figure out what they're getting at by looking at raw numbers as opposed to,
well,
overall percentages.
I guess that my frustration, though, is that it's like, I mean, like, I could compare, like, here's the crime rate in Washington, D.C. versus Wyoming. They have about the same population. I think Wyoming has a slightly smaller population than Washington, D.C. Like, why do I care? Like, does this tell me about how safe D.C. is versus Wyoming? Like, not really, because there's safe parts of D.C., there's probably dangerous parts of Wyoming, at least where there's, like, a grizzly bear or something, probably a dangerous part of Wyoming. Like, I mean, like, because, again, it's like, I mean, like in, you know, like, in an urban area of Worcester,
mm-hmm.
a poor area of Worcester, presumably there's more violent crime. I don't know. Presumably there is more than there is in, like, the essentially, like, this is in the city of Worcester, but this is essentially Holden, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what, so I don't understand.
So it's not a population issue or a geographic area issue. It's a socioeconomic issue. And again, where the issue is comparing Providence to Worcester isn't fair. I mean, if you go through Providence, there are literal Hoovervilles in Providence.
Yes.
Right? I mean, under 90, it's been a while since I've been down there, but under 95, there for a while was a tent city, you know, under one of the bridge overpasses. we haven't gotten to that point here in Worcester, right? So, I mean, maybe there's something to be said for what we're doing right that's keeping a certain population, their heads slightly above water, that's impacting
I don't think so. I think it has to do with the fact that half of our city is suburbs.
Well,
and that it's only
it's technically
within the city limits.
But that's my point, in a sense, is that it's socioeconomics. It's not okay. Just the geographic location, the name of the city, or the size of the population. Your comparison Wyoming to D.C., I think, was probably the best.
I'm sorry for getting into this.
But that's okay, because you know what? Based on what Brent's saying is that I do think that it is socioeconomic that create a lot of this crime. And when you look at it, I frequently go to Hartford. You cannot compare Worcester to Hartford. Hartford is an urban area, okay? And I'm there all the time. But again, when you look at the city of Worcester, you're right. They're like little pockets of poverty. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the demographic that makes up those pocket of areas of and poverty and the crime rates that's coming out of there, and most of this is crime on crime to them. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it all has to stem back to your income.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to that. And that's one of the reasons why I'm saying want to create jobs. Because if you start to create jobs, people will begin to help to mobilize and move themselves out of those areas or want to do better there. And my question is, I do want to understand, how are you able to compare this to Providence? No, I don't think we can compare Worcester to Providence. I don't think we can compare to Hartford. Mm-hmm. Okay, those are two areas that I can't really talk about Springfield, but I know that I'm in those areas all the time. And they're very, very different here in terms of it. But in Worcester, you can move to I can go to one area of it, and it's very suburban, and right on the outskirts of it, not even 5 minutes outside of that suburb, you got a whole pocket of poverty there. Like, whoa, did I go to some kind of Twilight Zone or something?
It's very abrupt. Yeah. Did you have any... Brandon, did you have another?
No, just to add on that briefly, I mean, and that's, I think historically it's always been the case in Worcester. It's just passing decade, the rules of the game have kind of changed a little bit. So what was considered to be poverty level, say back in the 50s or the 40s, may have been a higher quality of life than what we would consider to be the folks dealing with poverty issues today. But the neighborhoods really haven't changed that much. The issues within the neighborhoods really haven't changed that much. More or less, it's just we're dealing with the same socioeconomic issues that we haven't actually managed to tackle, which in a small city like this is kind of shameful.
And I think it's only probably, unless we figure out a way, it's going to continue these areas of poverty stay the same, because we have a huge influx of immigrants and refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And these individuals, on top of the individuals, the demographic that's already here, they can't get jobs, because when all of these manufacturing places close, they can't go in and be able to really, they don't have the proper education to go and get these biotech jobs.
Sure. They're not going to get that education if they're going to school hungry every day.
No, they're not.
Well, I wanted to wander off into crazy territory some more here. I wanted to mention that Gabe Rollins is the guy who sort of opened my eyes to realize that that Worcester and Providence are not the same. That if you want Worcester to have the vibrance of Providence, not going to happen, because Worcester doesn't have the urban density. If you want Worcester to have, if you want to brag that Worcester has less crime than Providence, doesn't really matter, because Worcester doesn't have the urban density.
The metropolitan area isn't the same. You forgot to mention that Gabe Rollins currently a candidate for Worcester City Council.
He's going to run for Worcester City Council, apparently. I think this is his campaign logo. I think this is a tremendous logo, a nice little caricature of his head in there. I think it's a tremendous logo. I'm going to vote for him. I don't know how he stands on the issues. Great logo. I'm going to vote for him. I want to talk a little bit about newspapers. We have another issue. I want to give you, this is a newspaper I've been working on called Happiness Pony. We have Happiness Pony issue 2 is out, and it's available in the lobby of WCCA downtown at, I think, 415 Main Street is the main place that I'm putting them out regularly. And also is protected by security so that people won't just throw them in the trash.
Beautiful.
Other places around town, though, they're available. And we do have important information, such as how many teeth do women have. Surprisingly, has been a controversial issue down through the years. You would think you could just count, but no, people haven't always done that. Also, we have, I found this week, free as a newspaper, the Worcester East Side Community Development Corporation newsletter. It has the kinds of things that you would expect from a CDC newsletter. My feedback to them is that these lines are too thick. You think that this is a trivial complaint or a trivial suggestion? Really, take the lines away for the next issue. Just make sure that the boxes next to each other have contrasting shading, or maybe no
No contrasting at all. See what it looks like. Just look at it on the screen real quick. You know, take the black lines away. Because people need a little space for the text to breathe, to have its...
There's a reason why newspapers don't put lines between everything. There it makes it very hard to read.
Or at least not gigantic, thick lines. Do you guys have anything else? Is there any other issues?
Yeah, I wanted to mention something I saw on Sunday was a Start in the Street down on Main Street.
Sure.
Another great arts festival. There were a couple... incidents of, I guess it's the right thing to do at this point considering the law, but of spot checks of licensed pit bulls down there.
Really?
And what was interesting about it was police department just kind of going to make sure that dogs down there were registered. They seemed to only be going after the pit bulls that actually had muzzles on their faces, though. There were a couple dogs that were pit bulls that were walking around that actually had the muzzles that are now required under the new city ordinance.
Yes.
But meanwhile, there was actually someone with two Great Danes that was down there. Right? I mean, I was trying to convince my son to go for a ride.
Nobody's
on one,
ever been attacked by a Great Dane, though. Don't worry about that.
I think the Great Dane could eat you in one bite if it wanted to. Meanwhile, the pit bulls were just, you know, this big and walking around.
Is that the big dog?
Yeah, you know, the ones are like six feet tall when they stand up on their hind legs.
A human, if they're standing?
Yes, ridiculously oversized. I mean, they were knocking people over just from turning around. But they're beautiful. All the dogs were very well behaved, was more my point. I don't think the spot checks were actually necessary.
It wasn't that thing.
I'm not aware of any children who have been reported missing after encountering
maybe
a pit
they
bull
just
down
felt
Main
like,
Street.
You know what, though? I think it's one of those things where it's like, you got probably some city councilors. You got a lot of, you definitely have some police just because it's a big event.
Sure.
And you got some people bringing dogs out in the public, which is nice.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that the police kind of feel like they have to be like, okay.
It was just funny to watch because...
We're not going to enforce this in any other circumstance, but here we have to.
The majority of dogs that I saw down there, which there weren't that many, were actually, you know, would fit into the category of pit bull. And you didn't even notice that they were there until you tripped over one, right? I mean, they were, as usual, the most harmless, well-behaved dogs you could imagine, as most dogs that end up on a leash in a public place typically are. It was just kind of funny to see the way the ordinance is being enforced and that absolutely nothing has changed.
That's awesome. You know, I think 10% of the pit bulls I've seen walking down the street in recent months have had muzzles. 0% of the pit bulls have attacked me, which is nice. So.
Well, and from what the city is reporting, that, you know, it seems the byproduct of the ordinance is a lot of dogs that had been previously registered are no longer registered in the city, which it seems
Ghost
to be
dogs.
Costing the city money. And if the goal is actually to keep an eye on potentially dangerous dogs, well, how are you keeping an eye on something that was registered last year and this year is now off the books?
So can I ask you a question?
Sure.
About that? Are you saying the dogs are no longer registered in the city and the city is enforcing the law, but the dogs are still living in the city?
And since the city doesn't know where they are because they're not registered, it's kind of tough to tie it together.
So isn't that defeating the...
We tried to explain this to the city council all of last year. They didn't seem to get it. But yeah, I'm not sure if you're aware, we have a pit bull ordinance now.
Yes,
okay,
I do.
So,
We only have 3 minutes and this could go an hour long.
It could go another hour. But yeah, we tried making that argument quite a bit last year and it didn't seem that people would get it. That by, you know, asking for the increased registration requirements, you're more likely to push people off the map as opposed to bring more people on. So.
All right. Well,
if there was a problem, it hasn't been solved.
I'm gonna cut this off because this could get way out of control. Linda, thank you for being on the show. People, you got to Google Pepsi Refresh Bountiful Harvest. You got to vote for this project. We got to keep more food. We got to keep food out of the dumpster. We got to keep that food
on people's table. We got to keep people fed.
Yes, I need you to vote continuously until June the 1st.
You can
every
vote like
day.
Four times a day or something.
You can
says.
You can vote. You can either vote by texting. You can either do by going online. But I need you to vote. You can only vote one time in my category. However, there are other areas on there. Just vote for Bountiful Harvest in the $50,000 category. And not only when you vote that day, pass it along to your friends. Everyone, I need the votes. That's all. So we can get this grant to be able to do a good thing in this Worcester.
Fantastic. All right. Well, everybody vote for that. This is the 508 Show. I'm Michael Benedetti. This is Brendan Mellon.
See you next week.
We'll talk to you next week, guys. Bye-bye.